People see this change. They know it and they recognize it. And they want to be with us. In the first place, because of greed, they want what we've got. And later on, for the sheer joy of doing it. Here is the way in which to make an act of perfect contrition. May all the Buddhas and ancestors who have become enlightened have compassion upon us, or me. Free us from the obstacle of suffering, which we have inherited from our past existence, and lead us in such a way that we may share the merit that fills the universe. For they, in the past, were as we are now, and we will be as they are now in the future. The absolute guarantee of Buddhahood. The total recognition that those who have done this were as we are now. And we will be, if we keep this up, as they in the future. One of the most beautiful sentences in all of Buddhist liturgy. Hate and delusion. No one of us knows exactly when it started for us. All the evil is committed by my body, in my speech, and in my thoughts. I now confess everything wholeheartedly to myself and to the eternal. And I'm going to do something different. This is all the meaning of Sangha. You can see the importance of the Eightfold Path, right thought, right speech, right action, which all comes out of right meditation. And all the evil committed by me is committed by my body, speech, and thought. Because you didn't think, you did something. How many times have you said, I didn't think, I just did it? If there had been right meditation, there would have been right thought. We would have been careful what we said, and we most certainly would not have committed an act. So we come back. We telescope back through the confession to where we should have been in the first place, right meditation. And that is what we are going to do something about. Never doing these acts, words and deeds and thoughts again. By this act of recognition of our past behavior, and our contrition, therefore, we open the way for the Buddhas and ancestors to help us naturally. Bearing this in mind, we should sit up straight in the presence of the Buddha, in the presence of the Eternal, and repeat the above act of contrition, thereby cutting the roots of our evil doing. Now, in the Far East, on confession night, as I said, they have these big halls and corridors full of the hells and what goes on in the hells. And ceremony takes place in the dark, and you start along the dark corridors, and suddenly there will be greenish candles or something of the sort, and there's a demon chopping a man up, or wrenching the tongue out of a liar, and you go and suddenly there's a picture of a bodhisattva. There sits a monk as a bodhisattva with a candle and incense, and he or she will offer you a little piece of paper on which is written this confession verse. They say nothing, they merely bow. and you go on and there are more hells everywhere, but you have had hope. Kanzeon, the aspect of compassion in Buddhism, has shown you that there is a way out. And you go through more and more hells, and you'll find a quarter of somebody on a chopping block, and a couple of, maybe a couple of demons weighing someone against a colossal boulder. And you know the person's still heavier than a 5-ton boulder, and one's scratching his head and saying, how is this possible? I mean, look at this. I've seen all of these. They're absolutely fascinating, the way in which they teach the dangers of this, and you go on through these hells, and you come to the next bodhisattva, which is love, the aspect of love in Buddha, in Buddhism. Fugen in Japanese. And he holds out his begging bowl, and you place your little piece of paper in it, saying, I make this confession to that which is all love in your mind. I give these things up. I accept whatever else is going to come, but I'm not going to do this anymore. And the monk simply sits there holding the bowl, receiving the pieces of paper. And you go on, and some of the tortures are much worse because although you've given it up, you still got karmic consequence. You still haven't necessarily cleaned everything up. And then you come to the third one, which is sitting there as the representative, who, I beg your pardon, is sitting there as the representative of the eternal. And having recognized that you've gone through all of the hells and have truly accepted what you have done and have given up what you have done, he worships you as the Buddha that is to come, and offers incense to you. Thereafter, the corridors are just dark, and every now and then there is a monk holding a candle so that you will not go round the wrong area. You then come out into the ceremony hall, and as each one leaves the dark corridor, the precentor, the chief musician of the temple, sings your praise for having gone through all the past, cleaned it up, and recognized your own Buddhahood. And he sings your praise, and sometimes in the Far East, I have seen this done with 5,000 people, and only one poor musician, and you've got to do it for every single person. And every now and then, because I was part of, I was holding some of the candles, every now and then he would look up the corridor wondering if there were any more. I used to feel so sorry for him. And then he'd see another little girl coming around and he'd do it again, just showing that this one had taken charge of his life. I love that man. He's dead, I heard last year. Reverend Mackey. Anyway, the ceremony, everyone sits down in the hall, having been congratulated for what they've done, and the three who represented the eternal, Fugen and Kanzeon, compassion, love, and wisdom, come out, and a great cauldron is brought. Now, a lot of temples burn down at this particular ceremony. So nowadays, the Japanese and the Chinese governments are very, very insistent that a fire engine shall be there on the night, which is rather unfortunate. However, cauldron is brought, and the three light the pieces of paper and drop them in the cauldron, thus burning up forever the past karma. Now, the character Mu, which has been variably translated as nothingness, emptiness, etc., comes into it here. The character represents a fire that is consuming everything. The character, therefore, implies immaculacy, nothingness, emptiness, cleanness, purity, purification, as applied to the ceremony of Sangye. It implies the ending with the purification of the fires of compassion, love, and wisdom. It implies the ending of old behavior. But one should remember, as Keizan very clearly states in the Denko Roku, that one's old karma can still work upon one. And if you wish to continue to train as thoroughly as possible, it's very important to keep this recognition in mind. You really must keep that in mind. One's old training, one's old karma can still work upon one. You can make it work for good, as the person that I spoke of who gave herself a penance each time she messed up. You can make it work for good, but also recognize that it is there and that it is actually happening. Because what you were 20 years ago still affects to a certain extent what you are now. And you need to remember that. Unfortunately, we don't seem to throw anything out of our heads. We should keep this in mind. So, that is the second ceremony. And it is the second chapter of the Shushogi. The big procession that takes place before this ceremony in the Far East is done barefoot. We have not been able to do that in Shasta as yet because we had not got a cloister all round the temple. Besides, I think it would be a little difficult because our cloister is cement and theirs were polished wood. There was a problem with polished wood. People frequently become very emotional, as one can believe with a ceremony of this type, and they can slide sometimes on polished wood. So I personally think that it is better to use slippers, but if you are ever in the Far East and you see one of these ceremonies, they will do it barefoot. I did have one person once from England who did it barefoot in the snow and through the rocks whilst absolutely admiring his sincerity. Given the fact that he was very ill afterwards with flu, one has to wonder about his wisdom. Now remember that the Buddha warned very, very much about asceticism. You are not supposed to half kill yourself doing these things. Sanity has to be there. And as I said yesterday, 55 miles, no 54 and a half, and no 55 and a half, is very difficult to maintain. but there is no doubting of the sincerity of purpose, only the wisdom of doing it. In Japan, they usually do not have the big pictorial scenes, the big statues of the hells. Instead, they have dark curtains, usually dark red, and it's like a maze. And every few yards, there's a tiny little candle held by a monk, so that you are going through the darkness until you reach the three monks who sit as compassion, love, and wisdom. This is the Zen method of doing the same thing, but you should understand, if you are ever in Singapore or Hong Kong and the like, and you see one of these temples with the Hall of the Hells, you should understand that it is for the Jukai ceremony and that it is the same thing. The reason why is because in meditation, in Soto Zen, one sees all the hells one has created for oneself inside oneself when meditating. As I said earlier, I spoke to you, remember, of remembering some of the things that may have happened in your childhood. Therefore, you go through the dark curtains and these things come up as pictures within you of what you have done and the realization of how much you want to be rid of them. One does have to be careful in putting the curtains up so that people do not become frightened, because sometimes it is more frightening in the dark, in more or less total darkness, than it is to suddenly come across a demon holding an axe in the air over a wax statue. I say this because if some of you ever do come to Shastra and you do Jukai, you need to understand why there are no statues there, only the curtains. Sojiji had curtains, Eiheiji had curtains. All the big Japanese temples use curtains for this. And, of course, as I said, we do not go barefoot. The next thing that happens, again, we'll be able to do it this way in future because we've got enough cloister, is you spend another day in meditation, all-day meditation, and attending ceremonies. The only thing that can change the time of ceremonies, and sometimes this confuses people because they want to know why we haven't kept to the schedule. The only thing that can change the schedule is if there's a thunderstorm. None of these should be done in a thunderstorm, because you've got enough going on without having lightning flashes and possible strikes. So if there is any possibility of thunder or lightning, the ceremonies are cancelled to another day. The third ceremony that takes place is the bloodline ceremony. That takes place after you have done another day of meditation and living as the monks do, the celibate life and the vegetarian life, attending ceremonies and doing much meditation. By the way, this usually takes place in April. The first week I was in Sojiji, it was just starting, and I was expected to do it straight away because it was automatically presumed that as a Buddhist who had been the chief lecturer of the London Buddhist Society would know all about it. Those were famous last words. England had never heard of it. And when I told them that this was happening, they told me it couldn't be. Buddhism didn't do this. Well, it's been doing it, to my knowledge, since about 200 years before Christianity. So, never mind. Anyway, let's look at the third chapter. The third chapter, receiving the precepts. Receiving is not quite the right word. It means, however, what I was trying to say was receiving within one's blood and bones, having made this decision, having made this determination, having heard the precepts and now having given up everything that was evil, one now took those precepts and made them part of one's blood and bones. One really received the precepts. After recognizing our evil acts and being contrite, therefore, we should make an act of deep respect to the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, for they deserve our offerings and respect in whatever life we may be wandering, which could also be interpreted in whatever job we are doing in the world. The Buddhas and ancestors transmitted respect for the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha from India to China. If they who are unfortunate and lacking in virtue are unable to hear of these three treasures, how is it possible for them to take refuge therein? One must not go for refuge to mountain spirits and ghosts. One must not go chasing after past lives and see if we can find out who we were, because it's not us anyway. It's just part of the handful we've picked up. It doesn't matter who we were. Our job is cleaning it up. Nor must one worship in places where there is not the truth, for such things are contrary to the truth. One must instead take refuge quickly in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, for therein is to be found utter enlightenment as well as freedom from the sufferings of birth and death and life. Now, they speak, the operative word here is take refuge quickly. I think somewhere in the New Testament of the Christian Bible, they speak of someone who has got rid of all the devils inside himself, comes home, finds his household swept and clean and empty, and because of the emptiness, takes in seven more that were worse. Now, that is actually a very Buddhist statement as well, because when you've got rid of this stuff, you better take refuge in the eternal very fast and in what the eternal preaches. Otherwise, you are going to be casting about, well, what do I do now? I'm not doing such and such any longer. And if you do not take refuge in the teachings of the eternal, you can very quickly get into the wrong thing. So, take refuge quickly in the eternal. Don't sit there for the entire day saying, well, I'm never going to do this again, or I'm going to try not to. Now, what do I do? Because that, you know the old statement, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Watch it. It can get in very fast. I have warned people of this far more often than you might think. A pure heart is necessary if one would take refuge in the three treasures. Having cleaned yourself by confession, it is imperative to take refuge quickly. I used to work as an organist. I was a professional musician before I became a monk. And one of the Church of England parsons I worked for said something that I've always remembered, and that was that immediately after taking communion was the time when most people started to sin, because it was the time when they felt they were purest, and therefore they didn't terribly much notice what they were doing. Now that fits in very, very much with what I've just said. As soon as you're cleaned up, if you do not take refuge immediately, you can get very badly caught. One of the things I have told people to do after they have done Sangha is for the next day when they are considering how to organize their lives, is any time a thought comes up that could possibly put them back on the wrong lines again, is to repeat the three treasures, homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Just do it almost like a little mantra in the mind. Just repeat it so that you sort of put your mind back in gear again before you get too far away. At any time, whether during the Buddha's lifetime or after his demise, we should repeat the following with bowed heads, making gashaw. You see, I took this straight from Dogen. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. We take refuge in the Buddha since he is our true teacher. We take refuge in the Dharma since it is the medicine for all suffering. We can find the cure in the teachings. Not physical body aches and pains, by the way, just in case somebody gets that one wrong. We take refuge in the Sangha, since its members are wise and compassionate. And that also goes for the laity. Remember, the Sangha is four parts. Laymen, laywomen, male monks and female monks. Don't leave the laity out. They are just as much part of the Sangha, and some of them are a lot wiser, I have found, than some of the young monks I found in the Far East. Unfortunately, that should not be, but it was. If we would follow the Buddhist teaching, we must honor the three treasures. This foundation is absolutely essential. Before we can truly receive in our blood and bones the precepts and show them to everyone else. I was in the unfortunate situation once in my own temple in Japan of having a couple stay there who were, I suppose, for lack of I don't wish to be rude to any psychologist present, were seeing what would happen if they did horrendous things in the presence of a Zen master. And on one occasion I found them copulating on the Haiseki, which is the worshipping seat in front of the altar. And I walked to the gong, and I hit it three times, repeating the three refuges, and I walked away. And every half hour or so, I would walk into the hondo and do this whilst they remained in my house. It put my brain back in gear. It stopped me hitting them over the head, which was the first instinct that came up. And I didn't break the precepts, and to this day, the pair of them are thoroughly ashamed of what they did. In the late 60s, there were people who said they were psychologists who went around seeing if they could test Zen masters in order to debunk them, as they put it. These were not the only two. I think they did damage to a very fine profession, personally, but there's nothing I can do about that. They did some very serious damage in Thailand whilst I was there, in that they fed a lot of elderly and fairly important monks LSD in their begging bowls to see what would happen. And most of the monks became extremely sick and ill. Unfortunately, they were Americans, and it did not endear America to the Thai priesthood. I tell you these things because if some of you do ever go